All right, good afternoon, everybody. It's great to be with you. My name is Ryan Lombardi. I'm the Vice President for Student and Campus Life. Nice to be with you again. I know that it's been a number of weeks since we've had one of these fora, but I look forward to spending the next hour with all of you and my colleagues that I'm joined with today. It's a little after 1 o'clock Tuesday here in Ithaca, New York, another snowy day. We still have about, at least in my yard, about a foot of snow on the ground. It snowed for a little bit this morning, some snow showers, as they call them, but didn't accumulate to much more, so that's good. And we're supposed to get some warmer temperatures later this week. We're very excited that we should break into the low 40s. When I tell my parents who live in Florida about that, they chuckle quite a bit when I'm excited to put on a slightly lighter jacket when we get into the low 40s. I hope that everybody is doing well. I hope this day finds you and your loved ones doing well and staying safe. Again, I'm joined by my colleagues today, and we look forward to sharing some information and updates with you today. I also want to thank everybody for the questions you submitted. We'll do our best to answer those as we have framed our comments for you today. So let me give just a real quick recap in terms of where we're at, then I'll introduce my colleagues, and then we'll get started. We're just a few weeks into the academic semester, as you know, although it feels like we've been going a little longer since move-in started a number of weeks before the semester. And you also know that we were at COVID alert level yellow for a period of that time, given that we had seen some clusters of positive cases on campus as we were starting this semester. I'm very pleased that we were able to revert to COVID alert level green yesterday, which I'm sure that many of you are aware of. And we've been able to begin opening up some opportunities for recreation and fitness, which we'll also expand on a little bit later today. I do want to just address briefly some of these gatherings that led to us moving to yellow. Most of these things, I want to be clear, are happening in small groups and small groups of students who are getting together, understandably out of a desire to socialize, but doing so in a manner that doesn't comport with public health guidelines. And so one person who is carrying the virus in a small group like that can make it spread very quickly, especially since younger individuals, many of them tend to be asymptomatic, not all of them, but many of them tend to be asymptomatic. So it makes that much more able to happen. And so we just continue to reiterate for our students to adhere to all of the guidelines. Even small groups can really deeply impact our campus. So to avoid those at all costs. But most importantly too, if we do have situations like we did this beginning of this semester, to make sure that the students are fully cooperating with our staff in Cornell Health and with the County Health Department in regards to contact tracing efforts. We have a great team who will ask students about who they've been in contact with. That's very important for us so that we know that and we can get those students tested. We can get them in quarantine. We can get them isolated if necessary if they end up testing positive. Our ability to identify positives, but then identify contacts of positives and to get those people out of kind of general campus circulation really is the secret sauce in terms of our ability to keep this campus open. So if I can implore for all of you to make sure that people are being fully transparent with us when it comes to contact tracing and cooperation with our teams. I will say that the numbers have moderated not only on campus, but in Tompkins County. We meet regularly with the County Health Director, Frank Kupra, who's been a great partner to Cornell throughout this process. And although we were peaking during the months of December and January when students weren't here, the numbers in Tompkins County have similarly declined meaningfully as they have on campus, as we've seen across the United States as well. So that is encouraging, but we cannot let our guard down. I think all of us are keeping well apprised and realize that while those numbers are encouraging, we can't get complacent because they could come roaring back if we're not careful and if we don't adhere to all the necessary steps. I do want to just make a couple of other comments about our virus prevalence on campus. And we know that we have more students on campus this semester than we did last semester, but still a good number of students who have decided to continue their education virtually, which we understand and support. I do want to emphasize that we still have not been seeing any COVID transmission to occur in the classroom. As we really study hard how the virus has spread on campus, that is not an area where we're seeing spread take place. And we will be talking a little bit more also about the impact that this toll continues to take on all of our mental well-being. Actually, Sharon McMullen, my colleague, will talk about that at the end of the panel today. And I just want to acknowledge very sincerely, I recognize that challenge. I've shared with my staff, many of the people who are on the Zoom today, that the challenges, it's been the challenges that I've faced myself, my family. I have two middle school age kids who have faced enormous challenges as well. I've talked to many, many students on campus, and I recognize how hard this has been on so many people. I also recognize, and at least for me, I feel like we at least are beginning to see a light on the horizon about the potential for ourselves as a country to make it through this pandemic. So we will focus and we will speak about mental health, but I wanted to just state from my heart how important it is. I think that we all acknowledge that and realize the challenge that this has placed on so many. And of course, I also want to continue, as I have in previous fora, to acknowledge and thank those of you who have been on the front lines. Of course, some of my colleagues here on Cornell have been doing that for the last year, but I know many of you also who work in the healthcare industries or in the service industries have done the same. And obviously, just yesterday, as a country, we marked a very unfortunate milestone of 500,000 people that have lost their lives due to COVID. And I want to extend my condolences to all of you who might have had an impact because of this terrible virus. And be sure that you know that our thoughts are with you and your families as we continue to work through this. Like I said, we do have reason to see a little bit of light on the horizon. We're fortunate today among our other panelists to have our medical director, Dr. Jones, with us, who will talk a little bit about the vaccine and what that is looking like here locally and hopefully more broadly as the semester goes along. I also want to remind you that our COVID website remains a great place for information. I know there is a great amount of information on that website, but we keep it updated. We keep adding information to it. So I encourage you to visit that covid.cornell.edu. To stay fully informed. Now, let me introduce my colleagues very briefly. I'll just go through real quick and introduce them one by one so that you're aware of who's with us, and then I'll come back around and make a few more comments before we move through the panel. First, and I just referenced her, I want to introduce Dr. Ann Jones, who's our medical director for Cornell Health and a COVID public health advisor for our campus at large. And Ann's going to talk with us today about vaccines. Ann, you want to say hello?
Hi, everybody. Good to be here. Thanks for joining.
Thanks. Another familiar face, Jenny Leffelman, who's an assistant vice president in student and campus life. And Jenny will be speaking today about an update on our in-person activities and what we can experience now and in the weeks to come. Hi, Jenny.
Hi. Hi, Ryan. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jenny. Another familiar face that has joined us today to help us focus on supporting student success in the classroom is Dr. Amy Goddard, who's the director of the Learning Strategies Center and the executive director of Academic Student Success Programs. Amy, do you want to say hello?
Hi, everyone. It's nice to be here.
Thanks, Amy. And last but certainly not least, another familiar face, Sharon McMullen, who's the Assistant Vice President for Health and Wellbeing and Student Campus Life. And she's going to be giving some updates, as I mentioned, around student mental health and some changes we're making and how we're focused on supporting our students in this moment and all the time. Sharon?
Thanks, Ryan. Hi, everyone. Delighted to be here. Looking forward to this hour.
Great. Thank you so much, Sharon. And everyone. All right, so I will start off, as I always do, answering a few of the general questions that came in to our query before this panel, and then I will turn it over to my colleagues that I just introduced. So let me tell you a little bit about some of the questions and comments that we got coming in. First is about student behavior. So I was just speaking a little bit about this and how important everyone following our public health guidelines really is to our success this semester, as it was in the fall. And I cannot be more proud of our students and how they stepped up and really did what was necessary in the fall to get through that semester. And I have full confidence that that will happen again this spring. Certainly people make mistakes. We've had students make mistakes. We understand that. But we are hopeful that students will, if they do make a mistake, that they'll be reminded of the need to stay focused and stay diligent about the public health guidelines. I do want to say, and there have been questions about, have there been consequences for students who have violated our guidelines? The answer is yes, there have. We don't, as an institution, and I feel strongly about this, we don't make it a practice of advertising those consequences. You've seen some institutions who have chosen to do that, and that is certainly their choice, but I've chosen that we're not going to be out advertising the consequences that happen to students, but we do follow up on misbehavior, reports that we get, and information that we have around students not adhering to our behavioral compact or to our public health guidelines. We hope that most students make a choice to not violate those guidelines. But again, we do recognize that both individuals and organizations in some cases must get some other more punitive consequences, which unfortunately we have had to put in place. I also want to continue to ask all of the parents who have joined us today to continue to be our partners in this. We need your help reinforcing with your students all of our guidelines and really encouraging them to cooperate with us in this practice. We do know some cases where the information's not flowing smoothly between students and parents. I can't imagine why. I've certainly experienced that myself and know that that's a phenomenon for sure. But if you can do everything to help us by encouraging your student not only to follow the guidelines, but really to deter travel. I cannot emphasize travel enough. When we studied the fall semester, we looked at travel, and it was actually one of the bigger risk indicators we found for virus spread in the community. In fact, I think the data, if I'm correct, a student who traveled had an 8 times greater likelihood of contracting the virus than a student who did not travel. So very significant, and that's why we've been more strict with travel this semester. Also with visitation, I know this is hard where we've asked people not to be visiting campus. We don't want a lot of extra guests and visitors up here. And I know that there have been questions about that desire, but we're please ask not to have visitors during this semester. If we can change things later in the semester, we will, but it's so critically important that we keep our campus and our community safe right now when it comes to student travel and to visitation. I do want to also share, and I think many are aware of this, that we have increased surveillance testing frequency to 3 times a week for some of our student populations. These are our populations include student athletes, people who live in sororities and fraternities who are members of those organizations, students who live in cooperative housing, group housing scenarios. This is not because we're trying to pick on those students, but because we're following the science. And again, when we analyzed the fall semester, we found that students that live or interact in those settings had a greater likelihood of testing positive and actually comprised a good percentage of the number of positive cases we had this fall. So we think that adding an additional level of testing, and we studied this extensively, reduces the likelihood of continued virus prevalence on campus this spring. So that was a really important step. I think all of you have probably heard by now how painless and quick and smooth our testing procedure is. I do it myself all the time, as do my colleagues, and it really is a breeze in and out. I think our team who's done that work has just been amazing to set up that system in such an efficient way. Certainly know that there are a lot of interest in in-person activities and a lot of pressure to open up and to do more and more and more. You saw my announcement probably yesterday about us starting to open our fitness and recreation centers. We are working on opening those as the week proceeds. And we do anticipate loosening restrictions further if we continue to keep the prevalence low. And that is a big if. We can also revert and tighten things up if we need to, which we don't want to be the case. But our ability to get back or get more active really is predicated on how much we're able to adhere to the continued guidelines. But it's certainly all of our desire to provide as many opportunities as possible for students and everyone to engage in campus. A few other questions. Housing, a couple of questions about housing, and my colleague Pat Wynn isn't going to join us today because there were just a few of these. I want to note that for those of you who are remote and still thinking about coming back to campus this semester, we've asked that you have made that decision and return to campus no later than March 15th. After that time, you'll need to just remain home for the remainder of the semester. That's what we're asking folks to do. So again, that's quite a ways into the semester, about 6 weeks into the semester. So hopefully you'll have made those decisions by then. I also recognize that we have to start thinking about next year. And for students who want on-campus housing for next year, that process has begun. We'll put the link in the chat so that students can express their interest. This is non-binding. It's a no commitment right now or fee or anything along those lines, but it gets them enrolled in the process so that later next month we can give them an opportunity to find an on-campus room next semester. So that information is in there as well. So those were just a couple of the questions about housing that I wanted to emphasize and what that looks like. We are starting, and I'll share this a little bit more at the end, we are starting, to, of course, to talk about the fall semester in general and what it's going to look like for campus. I'll close with that today, so I won't get into that in this moment. And then by far, the next the question that was highest on people's mind beyond the ones I've already mentioned is really around commencement and what are our thoughts and what is our thinking about commencement for this year in May of 2021. No decisions have been made. I know everyone is very anxious for a decision to be made one way or another about what commencement will look like. That we have been planning multiple scenarios for commencement this spring. They range from kind of completely normal commencement to completely virtual commencement and things in between too, some type of hybrid model for this year. And we don't know where we'll land yet, but we do hope to make that decision here in the next number of weeks, hopefully just in the next few weeks. I will say, and we've posted this information on the commencement website, I think it's highly unlikely to expect commencement to look as it normally has pre-pandemic. I think that there will be have to be some modifications made in order to make sure that we can acknowledge our students and celebrate in a way that's both safe and meaningful. So we're still working diligently on that, but I do want to emphasize the information on the commencement website that really discourages any non-refundable travel arrangements, because I do think it's unlikely that we'll be able to have everything as it was pre-pandemic. I also want to acknowledge, I know that a message was distributed, I think it was last week, about the class of 2020 and plans to do something in person at reunions this year in June, which have been moved to virtual, and regret that that has caused a lot of disappointment for the class of 2020, but similarly hope that we're able to figure out a way to celebrate those students in fine fashion eventually with them, probably at a reunions at some point, and look forward to that. So a lot of questions about commencement. We will share an information, we will share a message broadly when those decisions are made. In the meantime, I do encourage you to keep an eye on the commencement website where we're keeping updates and adding and tweaking that information all the time to keep you as apprised as possible. All right, so those were the big questions. Like I said, I'll talk just very briefly about the fall semester in general at the end of the session. But now I'm going to ask my colleagues to go through some of the topics that we talked about early on here. And we're going to start today with Dr. Ann Jones, who I mentioned is our medical director and Cornell's COVID public health advisor. So Ann, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you very much. And again, great to be with everybody. So one of the most common questions that we're getting at Cornell Health these days is about vaccine and plans for distribution about vaccine on campus. And so wanted to take you through the three main updates really around eligibility, supply, and distribution of vaccine at Cornell. So, you know, going back, COVID vaccine became available first in mid-December in New York State. And that was first to emergency responders, healthcare workers in the state. And since then has moved through a process of assigning eligibility in phases, mostly according to job functions, until actually, or other characteristics such as age or a chronic medical condition, which actually was a list that was approved and rolled out just last week. And as each week has progressed since then, there have been more and more groups who have become eligible. And the eligibility process is a process that is done through the local health departments, either through the Tompkins County Health Department or the New York State Department of Health, which would create access to vaccine at one of the state-run vaccination sites through New York State Department of Health. So all of, oh, and there's a link around the eligibility process. So all of that being said, although these eligibility approvals are coming through week by week, the supply that's being allotted to each region in the state is coming through in different intervals and is often occurring in different intervals. And what that has created is that we know that many, many people who are eligible to receive the vaccine actually have not been able to receive the vaccine due to the supply not catching up to the demand or the eligibility in the region. And so, so on the Tompkins County Health Department website, there are designations around what groups of people should go to state-run vaccination sites and produce a self-attestation, which is the process through the state sites. And then there are other specific clinics that are held locally through the Tompkins County Health Department that are usually made available to certain eligibility groups. Sometimes it's a special clinic for healthcare workers. Other times it's a special clinic based on another eligibility guideline. And so what this means is that it's important for all of us, and this has been something we've all been doing regularly, is monitoring these eligibility requirements as they come out on the state website, and then looking to keep track of the vaccine clinics that are coming online locally, either through the health department, through Tompkins County Health Department, or through one of the state-run sites. So that's a lot to keep track of, but it is a very quickly evolving and moving process. And requires, you know, just a lot of diligence and looking and refreshing those websites. So I'm glad we've given you the links so that you can keep track of them. In some cases, we've learned that students may be required or advised to produce a letter to verify, especially if they're in a situation where they have a comorbidity status. And especially this may apply for out-of-state students or students who are studying remotely out of the state. And if that is needed, there is a process that can we can help you with at Cornell Health, where you can have us produce a copy of the medical record that you have and give you the information that would be helpful to allow you to get a vaccine wherever you are. Of note though, in New York State, those letters are not required. It's a self-attestation process, but we are here to help students either way. So now on to Cornell distribution. Many, many people have been asking, and the primary question is, are we distributing a vaccine here on campus? And the answer to that is no, not at this time. But then the next question is, when will we be able to distribute vaccine on campus and how will we be able to do that? So the process began for that back in December as well, when applications opened up for entities within New York State to apply to be a pod clinic. POD stands for Point of Dispensing Clinic in New York State. And at that time, Cornell University submitted an application to serve as a pod clinic for the state. Since then, we've received preliminary approval from the state, but we have yet to receive final approval or specific approval to move forward to receive and dispense vaccine on campus. So what we're doing now is that we're in the planning and preparedness process of working with various university teams and partners to look at things like feasibility, scalability, infrastructure, and to ensure that when we do get the go-ahead from the state, we will be ready to actively deploy and deliver vaccine to the community as soon as we can. And at this point, we've created a planning team. It's led by myself in collaboration with Dr. Frank Cantone on campus and is including leadership and representation from many groups on campus, Cornell Health, Facilities and Campus Services, Public Safety, Information Technology, Infrastructure, Communications, and Human Resources to make sure that we're ready across the board. There are many, many unknowns still out there regarding vaccine, many questions that are unfortunately unanswerable at this time. We know we've been getting many of these questions, but they include questions like when do we think we might be approved? How much vaccine do we think we might expect? What are the expectations for how quickly we would need to be able to deploy vaccines on campus or administer? We don't know the answer to those questions at this time, but we do know from keeping a close eye on the process across the state is that in general, these systems are highly regulated by the state. And so we will be closely following state guidance, state guidelines and rules, especially regarding distribution, eligibility, and across the board attempting to increase accessibility to the vaccine as much as possible. And really that again leads to say, you know, although there are many, many unknowns, what we do know is that COVID vaccine will be one of the most important tools to bringing this pandemic to a halt in our world, in our nation, and at Cornell. And we want sincerely as many people to be vaccinated as is possible for us to achieve as a community. What we know from the scientific literature so far is that COVID vaccine reduces the severity of illness and disease in individuals for those who get the vaccine. But another unanswered question is how well it inhibits spread or transmission. And so that's another question that we're getting quite often is, you know, for individuals who've received the vaccine, is it still a requirement to continue with masking, social distancing, et cetera? And the answer to that is yes, until the vaccine is in much greater supply or until the literature catches up and gives us the guidance. We have been getting other questions about the process for working through positive cases on campus. And I just want to say briefly that there's a a team called the Cornell COVID Response Team that works on every case on campus, including students, faculty, staff, looking for epidemiologic trends, connections that we need to be aware of, with the primary goal of ensuring campus safety and public health. Cornell Health manages every student who tests positive, doing notification, placement, contact tracing, and does that in collaboration with Tompkins County Health Department. In particular, if there are concerns about any activity on campus, any location, including classrooms, we're specifically looking at those situations one by one, as Ryan mentioned in the beginning, taking a very protocoled, standardized, and evidence-based approach to each one. And happy to report that specifically in the classrooms, we've been able to note no evidence of classroom-based transmission based on the social distancing guidelines and public health measures that are followed, which have been really excellent. So with that, thank you very much. Continue to enjoy being with you always.
Great. Thank you so much, Anne. That's great information, and appreciate all you and your team in Cornell Health are doing to support our students and our campus in this trying time. Next, we're going to go to Jenny, who's going to talk a little bit about our programming and in-person activities. I do want to, as I turn it over to Jenny, I just want to say again, as I said at the onset, I realize there is a lot of interest in us moving as quickly as possible, and we very much want to do that, but we will be driven and guided by the data and the evidence on campus to make sure we do so in a safe manner. We think it would not be wise to move too quick and have ourselves in a place of needing to shut down or even worse, prematurely end the semester. So we think that taking a slow and gradual approach is the right way. But Jenny, why don't you take us through a little bit about what we've got planned now and as the semester goes along?
Sounds great. Thank you, Ryan. Good afternoon, everyone. I am excited to share with you a few of the opportunities that we are going to be having available here on campus over the upcoming weeks, knowing that vigilance is still our top priority. There have been a variety of questions about how students can remain physically active on campus, and that's been our first priority here. Starting this week, both in Barton Hall, Lina Rink, Reese Tennis Center, Helen Newman Pool, and Bowling, in addition to our fitness centers, will begin opening throughout the week for individual student use. That link is here in the chat, so you can see the hours and the availability for those fitness center and athletic and recreation opportunities. Due to the winter weather in Ithaca, unfortunately, our outdoor facilities are not going to be open right away, but as they become available for recreational use throughout the semester, we will be opening those up for really safe outdoor activity like we had in the fall. We're also working to provide more outdoor activities that students can participate in small groups. So more to come there, but our team is working on that as we speak. Our intramurals and club sports teams are also currently conducting activities virtually and will continue to do so at this time. As we begin to phase in-person activities for both athletics and club sports, students will be able to have individual and limited group activities, but that will be later on in the semester once we're able to keep the prevalence down and make sure that it's safe. So for right now, all club sports activities are still remaining virtual. We have received some questions about sororities and fraternities and involvement in those organizations this spring. Sororities and fraternities offer a great way for students to remain connected and have done an amazing job this year of remaining virtual. Both the Interfraternity Council and the Panhellenic Council are hosting virtual recruitment as we speak. Fraternity bid day was yesterday, and the sorority bid day is later this weekend. And as I mentioned, both of those experiences have been completely virtual. There are a maximum, once students join sororities and fraternities, there are a maximum of 4 weeks allowed for the new member process. And so that will take place over these next 4 weeks. The Multicultural Greek and Fraternal Council process is rolling out throughout the spring and varies or based on organization, but that will also be an opportunity for students to get involved this spring. One quick note for students who join fraternities and sororities, they should be aware to make sure you confirm your housing requirements with those organizations. and do so in advance to the housing lottery on campus. All those timelines are here these next couple weeks, so stay tuned. There is one other deadline I'd like to make sure is on the radar for new fraternity members, and that's the dining deadline. You are able to reduce your meal plan if you would like to have meals grab and go from the fraternity houses, but you do need to make sure you do that by March 3rd. There's additional details about sorority and fraternity life and engagement in those organizations on the Office of Sorority and Fraternity Life website. So that link will go in there too. We've also received a bunch of questions about service opportunities, and our Public Service Center and many other organizations on campus have done a great job of continuing to provide service opportunities for our students. Our service activities continue to stay virtual. All of our service programs are finding impactful ways to support our community through online tutoring, engaging with elders virtually, supporting K-12 students with supplemental in-class instruction, and providing translation services. We have limited in-person community work study positions at some local agencies and adhere to strict COVID health and safety practices for those experiences. Additional information about the virtual and in-person service opportunities that the Public Service Center is providing will also be found on the website that we just posted in the chat too. Our Campus Activities Office continues to find amazing ways to connect students virtually. Hopefully you have all been aware of the Weeks of Welcome. Several weeks of virtual events and programming hosted by Campus Activities have been off to an amazing start with great attendance and tons of different programs from comedians to game nights to concerts. And these events have been hosted by organizations all across campus. So if you haven't joined anything yet, please feel free to explore the campus group's website and see just the amazing schedule of events that are planned virtually. The most notable, we just had our Spring Club Fest, where 5,400 students connected virtually to learn about our over 1,000 student organizations and clubs. Clubs will have their own virtual programming and will stay connected through the semester. And again, hopefully over the next few weeks, we're gonna be able to offer limited in-person gatherings soon for our student organizations and our student activities on campus. I think that's everything. I know I talked fast, but lots of moving parts in the campus involvement and community engagement space. So thanks for the opportunity today, Ryan, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Jenny, and appreciate the good work that you and your team are doing to try to help keep our students engaged. And I know, would say to everyone, I know it's tough, and especially if you're a student or if you are a student that's a little bit more introverted in nature, I know that's particularly challenging. So you just really have to lean in, put yourself out there, and make some of these connections that we've set up for you. We're going to switch gears now and have Amy Goddard walk us through some advice and opportunities to promote academic success. As I mentioned, Amy leads Cornell's Academic Success Student Success Initiative. So, Amy, why don't you take us away?
Great. Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with everyone today. It's actually really hard to believe that we're already 3 weeks into the semester. It's gone by really quickly for me and slowly in other respects, actually. As everyone knows, like last semester, we're offering courses in multiple modalities. We have online courses, in-person courses, and hybrid courses. We know that many students had been looking for more in-person opportunities in terms of the classrooms and their academics. And we're happy to share that we have 50% more classes with in-person components this semester as compared to last semester. And the faculty that I've talked to have all expressed enthusiasm for being back in the classroom and for seeing their students in person, even if it is physically distanced. It's nice to be in that classroom environment together. As many of you may remember, towards the end of the fall semester, we conducted a survey of students' learning experiences, and we learned a lot of valuable things from you and your peers that we want to share with you because they are really important. And they actually mirror some of the things that we in the Learning Strategy Center share with students as well. So I want to talk a little bit about the keys for a successful semester. So if we could go to the slide. What you're going to be seeing on the slide are the four 4 distilled keys of a successful semester. Again, this is based on things that we in the Learning Strategy Center share with folks, and also what you all shared with us in that survey. So probably the most important thing, and they're all connected too, the most important thing here is really thinking about, you know, when you're thinking about success, managing your time. And our student tutors who are amazing and work with different disciplines across campus, this is one of the things that they point to as what's helping them be successful. And so I'll just mention a few things about managing your time. One thing that if you haven't already done so, I encourage you to think about mapping out important due dates and events all in one place in something we call a semester calendar, something maybe it's a dry erase board that you have on the wall or a piece of paper where you can see everything at a glance. That's really helpful when you're looking at what are the upcoming things that are due and how do I plan backwards from that. Another thing that you can think about doing is a weekly calendar, planning out how you're going to spend time during the week. And many of you mentioned, especially those of you who are in asynchronous courses, is to plan time for watching the videos for your courses or for going to those office hours and not scheduling over those times that you have. And having a weekly calendar will help with that. Now, the other thing that we probably all know is that a calendar can only go so far. It's really important that you maintain focus and try and minimize distractions. And one way of doing that, because there's a lot of stuff going on, is to set a timer for maybe working for 25 to 30 minutes at a time, then taking a 5-minute break, but really focusing in on those 25 minutes that you're spending. Connected with that is something that came up a lot in the survey, which is avoiding procrastination. And there's a lot of different reasons why people procrastinate. I would venture to say that some of us in this room, Zoom room, have procrastinated at one point in time in our lives, maybe recently. But think about when you're procrastinating, why is it you're procrastinating? It's important to dissect and reflect on, you know, there's different reasons for procrastination. Sometimes you might feel overwhelmed. Sometimes it's, you feel like it has to be done perfectly, or maybe you just don't have the motivation to do something. But for each of those different reasons that you might procrastinate, there are different things you can try, different strategies to help get you started. And I would encourage you to take a look at the Learning Strategy Center webpage to get some ideas for how you might minimize or avoid procrastination. Something else that came up in conversations with students from last semester and just in general was this idea of learning from mistakes. And I know Ryan started by talking about mistakes here. In the academic environment, mistakes are a really important part of learning. And again, you know, mistakes are something that when you make them, it's not the end of the world. What you have to do is you have to learn from them. I'm going to encourage everybody who's here to make mistakes in lower stakes environments. These might be getting help in an office hour or going to tutoring and asking questions there. So that way, when you get to your prelim or that final paper that you have, you've already addressed some of the things that you may not have known before. So learning from mistakes is going to be really, really important. Another thing to think about with mistakes is you want to work through some of these things that are challenging. So you do want to make mistakes as you're learning, but you don't want to struggle too much. And so make sure, and this gets me to my last point here, that you get help when you need it. Sometimes things can be really challenging and you don't want to spend too much time on something. You do want to try a little bit, but you want to make sure that you know where to get help when you need it. And one of the key points that came up in the survey that was conducted was to encourage everybody to interact with their peers and with their instructors as much as they can. So if we could go to the next slide, and I'll talk a little bit more about places where you can go to get help. So a few years ago, the Learning Strategy Center conducted a survey of students, and one of the key things that they suggested is that you go to get help when you need it. And you're going to need help at some point in time with some of the courses that you're in, and maybe it's not even course related. So I have some ideas up here on the slide about where you can go for help. One thing that is important to keep in mind is that studying with others has a lot of benefits. And Ryan alluded to this as well. So we're encouraging you to find someone in your classes to connect with. And again, this might be awkward, but the reward is definitely worth it. These people that you connect with, you can ask them about due dates, study with them, ask them content questions, maybe watch videos together. You can also go to office hours together. So getting help from your instructors is really important in the learning process. And if you have a buddy, you can go to office hours with them, and that makes things a little bit easier. If you are looking for a study partner, the LSC does have our study partner matching program. We've had about 1,200 requests so far, and I think made 800 to 900 matches in courses. It is not too late to sign up for a study partner, so I encourage you to do that. That will help you find someone else to connect with in a course. I've been talking with a few faculty, and many of them are encouraging, are asking for students to visit them in their office hours. So make sure that you go and use them. The instructors and the TAs are there to help you learn. Go take advantage of those resources that they offer. I'll just mention too that the LSC has a lot of opportunities in terms of free tutoring that we offer. We have, like I said, an amazing group of tutors. I encourage you to look at our webpage and see what we have available for tutoring. And if you're also looking for help with your courses, you can get that through department or college resources that maybe your specific college or the class might have. I want to mention too, knowing where to start is important. There's a lot of help available at Cornell. It's one of the things that I love so much about working here is that there's a lot of options, a lot of opportunities. But what's important for you to know is that you have to seek it out and ask for that help. So find somewhere to start. Find someone you trust. And go to them and ask if you don't know where to start. I have some ideas up here. We've heard from and will continue to hear from some colleagues in Cornell Health. I also want to mention advisors. Go talk to them. They know your courses. They know the college. They know the support resources that are there. So visit them and ask them, virtually visit them and ask them, you know, where should I start? I'm having this issue. I have this concern. Where should I go? They are a great resource for directing you to the appropriate place to get more information. So I want to just close by saying a few other things, addressing some of the questions that came up. So I want to acknowledge that students are, of course, looking for more in-person activities and reasons to leave their rooms. And as Ryan and Jenny have already mentioned, the restrictions on in-person activities are being slowly lifted as public health conditions allow. And again, some thoughts from you all in the survey. You were encouraging yourselves and others to get outside. I know it is winter and it is kind of cold, at least here in central New York. You can build snowmen, you can go sledding, you can look at the frozen waterfalls of Beebe Lake. There's a lot of options, even though it is winter outside, for getting out of your room. Couple of other things on the academic side. This semester, something new we're introducing is called Zoom lounges. These are classroom spaces that are designated for student use for participating in online classes. I know that you're probably familiar with the Book a Study Space app. Those are reservable spaces. These Zoom lounges are not going to be requiring reservations. They're going to be places where you can just go and you can participate in your online class. We know that it's difficult to get from one place, an in-person, to an online class if there isn't enough time to find a place to do that class. We're going to be sharing more information about that as it becomes available. Just to close, I wanted to just reemphasize that, you know, as you already know, your time here at Cornell can be challenging. That's what Cornell does. It will push you. It will challenge you. There are a lot of resources for you to lean on. You just have to go and you have to ask for them. If not, reach out to the Learning Strategy Center. People in this room will be able to help you find those places. So just to remind you, important key takeaways: manage your time, develop strategies for doing that. Try not to procrastinate, explore why you're procrastinating and come up with some strategies to address that. And make sure that we have, you know, we have an incredible support network here. Make sure you get help when you need it. So thank you. And I'll turn it back over to you, Ryan.
Thank you, Amy. Excellent advice as always. I hope everyone takes that to heart. And I think we all see ourselves in some of those points that you mentioned as well. So I'll just acknowledge that. All right, we're going to close out the panel before I wrap it up. Our last panelist, Sharon McMullen, who I introduced before, is going to talk with us a little bit about mental health, both the here and the now, and how we're thinking about this more broadly at Cornell. So Sharon, thank you very much for this.
Thanks, Ryan. Delighted to be here all. I'd like to take a moment to give voice to the challenges of the spring 2021 semester. From a complex return to campus process designed to welcome students back to Ithaca as safely as possible, to navigating the virtual learning environment and the emotional impact of living in a physically distanced world for almost a full year now, this is far from an ordinary semester. In addition, we face complex national issues, including political tensions, economic stress, and recent acts of racial injustice and violence that have led to fatigue and stress for the campus community at large, and particularly for students of color. And of course, not to mention the winter weather. Those residing here in Ithaca know that we've seen lots of snow in the past few weeks, and many families across the country have been navigating extreme weather, placing considerable stress on their personal well-being, as well as on the systems and structures that support them. While the winter weather has been particularly challenging this year, we know that spring is on the horizon. Of course, all of these challenges impact student mental health and well-being. Teams from across campus, including in student and campus life, have developed resources to build students' resilience, to promote the importance of engaging in regular self-care practices, and to facilitate social connections during the spring semester. All of these are important protective factors of mental health and well-being. In addition to some of the examples that my colleagues have shared this afternoon, I'll throw a couple more in. The Skorton Center for Health Initiatives offers a wealth of programs and tips to build resilience, like study breaks, stress busters, and life hacks. And I see those links are going into the chat, so that's great. The Office of Spirituality and Meaning Making helps students identify opportunities to connect with themselves and others in meaningful ways during a time of solitude and physical distancing. To support students in their self-care practices as they balance academic workload, Cornell offers Let's Meditate, an online guided mindfulness meditation program, as well as the free virtual fitness classes through Cornell Recreational Services that Jenny mentioned. We do recognize that students are experiencing Zoom burnout. I am too. I bet a lot of people in this virtual space are as well. And as Jenny mentioned, the Public Service Center has identified COVID-friendly ways for students to establish social connectedness through community service. Of course, there's widespread support for student well-being across Cornell, from academic advisors, coaches, residential life staff, professors, and more. And all of this is part of Cornell's comprehensive approach to mental health. In keeping with CDC guidelines for pandemic operations, Cornell Health, which I have the privilege of supporting, is currently offering limited in-person services, with most of our routine care provided by telehealth to students both in Ithaca and studying outside of Ithaca. Professional mental health services look a bit different in the virtual environment. A range of services is available in our CAPS, which is our Counseling and Psychological Services Department, to support students needing professional care. We have workshops, drop-in consultation with a counselor, group therapy, and individual counseling all available. Students who are in New York State have access to these services through a secure Zoom platform. And distance learning students registered outside of New York can access our third-party vendor WPO's services to connect with local counselors in their state or country at no additional charge. Please know, staff in our primary care department attend to the mental health of students as well as the physical health, and can address many behavioral health concerns like sleep and stress and winter blues. Management of mental health medications is provided by both our medical providers and our mental health providers in psychiatry at Cornell Health. Students enrolled in the Student Health Plan, our insurance plan, have prepaid access to Teladoc, which includes mental health and medical telehealth services for those students who are in the United States. Finally, students can call Cornell Health anytime, day or night, and speak with a licensed therapist from our 24/7 support team of mental health professionals. And you can please visit health.cornell.edu for more information. As we adapt to support student health and well-being in new ways because of the pandemic, we're also thinking critically about the culture of mental health at Cornell. And in fact, the pandemic has shed light on areas for improvement, as well as the bright spots or the good work that's already happening on campus. In 2018, President Pollack charged a campus-wide review of student mental health, which resulted in a robust year-long process of engagement with our students, our faculty and our staff, and our larger community, including parents. It was guided by both internal and external review teams, and importantly, was not limited to clinical mental health services, but rather expanded to study Cornell's overall culture and how it impacts student mental health. This review produced an extensive set of actionable recommendations aimed at culture change, which fall into three categories, including the academic environment, campus culture, and clinical services. An executive accountability committee is charged with ensuring the implementation of the spirit of the good work done by this robust review. This committee includes four executive co-sponsors, including, importantly, two of Cornell's top academic leaders, Catherine Bohr, who is Dean of the Graduate School and Vice Provost for Graduate Education, as well as Lisa Nishi, Vice Provost for Undergraduate Education. Excuse me. Representing Student Life are Vice President Ryan Lombardi and myself, and in addition, three change leads who are experts in the areas of academic environment, campus culture, and clinical care are responsible for moving the recommendations forward, and in fact, have already made good progress on a number of fronts. You can visit the Mental Health Review website for ongoing updates. It's my privilege to support the health and well-being of our students, and I'm so thankful for the partnerships that exist all across campus to support students' mental health and well-being. I wish you all a healthy, safe, and wonderful spring semester. And now back to you, Ryan.
Thank you, Sharon, for that information. Appreciate all the efforts that you and your team are doing during the pandemic, but certainly focused on mental health support of our students and our community. Critically important as we all navigate this. All right, great amount of information today. I hope it was helpful. I know that we have recorded this session again as we have all of our fora and will be made available on the covid.cornell.edu website if you miss some of it or you want to revisit or get some more information that you might have glossed over during the time together. So please feel free to visit that website. I do want to just reiterate and stress how important all of our continued efforts are to keep our campus and community safe this semester. I know we've got this in us another 12 weeks or so, and we can get through this semester and hopefully be looking at life in this regard in the rearview mirror. To that end, I want to just mention briefly, I said this at the beginning about the fall semester. We have been starting to think about this and working to think about what the fall might look like. Of course, there are a lot of variables that we don't have the full information on, how much of our population will be vaccinated, what the virus prevalence will be, whether the variants pick up and slow down the nation's recovery efforts. All of those factors are certainly things that we're examining and looking at, but we are actively planning for a fall semester that we think will be much more close to life at Cornell prior to the pandemic starting, probably not exactly like life before the pandemic started. I think it will take us all a while to get back to a place that we were in 2019, but we do hope, depending on how things go over the coming months, to move our campus and our student experience much closer to what it was before. You can anticipate more information coming, and for students who are listening in today, we do anticipate lots of conversations with you throughout this semester to get your input and feedback on what has not worked well, what you would want us to prioritize as we begin to make our way through this pandemic and look to a different fall. and we'll want a lot of feedback on that process. So please be on the lookout for opportunities to give us that feedback. Please participate. Please, you know, click the surveys. I'll be likely having some focus groups and some conversations with students. So please, please, please do your part and help inform these decisions that will be coming as the semester goes on. I want to thank everybody who joined us today. I know you took some time out of your days to tune in, or maybe you're multitasking, as is often the case on Zoom. I also want to thank my colleagues, our panelists today, for their time, and certainly all of my colleagues that have been behind the scenes to make this webinar available, our tech folks and our support staff and my other colleagues who have been very helpful as we've put this together. Again, it will be posted on the website, so if you missed any part of it, you can rewatch it. And for all the students, I want to wish you the best of luck as we continue in this semester. Although I'm not on campus today in particular, I am on campus quite a bit. I look forward to seeing you around. And to parents, thank you for being with us. If you're a new parent and you aren't on our parent mailing list, please do be sure to subscribe. We've just put the link in the chat so that you can do that and get information from us as the semester goes on and for the rest of your students' experience at Cornell. That's it for now. Just a few minutes before 2 o'clock now in Ithaca, we're going to sign off. Wish you all a very good week and send my very best that you continue to stay safe and well in this challenging time. Thank you, everybody, and have a great day.